He had already told me the guys were flying up from Florida, the Black Ops. At that point, it got a little scary. They're here to do a job, and they're gonna kill someone. This is crazy.
In a marriage, three is a crowd.
You're seeing another woman.
Right.
What do you think it was?
Chemistry.
And chemistry can be explosive.
Your girlfriend in the Bahamas!
This is now the marriage from hell.
Enter the hitman.
What you're asking to do is not cheap. $200,000.
Here's a name. I'm going to bring you pictures of the person we wanted to have killed.
You say you now feared for your own life.
Yes.
A hit that couldn't miss.
You're the boss at this point, you know. I want to make sure you're satisfied.
Or a surprise to die for.
He actually notices a camera inside the car.
This was a big moment.
A huge moment. Everything just took off real fast.
No fairy tale ending for this love story. It would end either in murder or prison.
He said, my guys don't back down from a plan.
This is Dateline. Here's Andrea Canning with The Target.
In this quiet, wealthy neighborhood, behind the gates of this lavish estate, a fuse was lit. Newfound money led to explosive fights, torrid affairs, deadly secrets.
One car will hit her.
And a wicked plot that disturbed even seasoned detectives.
Someone approached him to be hired as a hitman.
A scheme with a twist.
This is where this whole story goes a little bit Hollywood.
Yeah, literally.
The starring characters, an unhappy housewife.
Don't you worry, you are done!
A luxury car salesman.
The only thing I could ask is why.
A former mortician and aspiring model.
It was horrible.
And a prominent doctor.
We were both scared. We both didn't know what to do.
Our story begins in Rockland County, New York, nestled along the Hudson River, about an hour's drive north of New York City, the home of Dr. Ira Bernstein, a well-respected podiatrist.
I've always wondered why someone chooses feet as a doctor.
Feet are extremely important, yes.
He took us back to where it all began, Penn State University, where he first met his future wife, Susan. Here they are, smiling from the pages of their college yearbook. It was the mid-90s when the couple bumped into each other at a fraternity party.
She was just so caring and compassionate. She was supportive of me. She was there when I had to study long hours.
Sounds like a great relationship.
It was.
After college, Susan worked toward her master's and eventually her doctorate in education, and Ira went to podiatry school.
Some of my fondest memories of being in the med school was spending time with Susan. It was great. We'd go out to dinner for $20, and we were both grateful.
Not a lot of money.
We had no money.
A few years after that, in 2002, they got married.
And when you both said your I do's, did you feel like it was right?
I did.
The couple decided to move back to Rockland County, near Ira's hometown. And it wasn't long before he and Susan were raising three children. Ira says he worked day and night, and it quickly paid off. He opened multiple foot surgery centers and also invested in real estate. The couple was grateful for their good fortune.
My house was 13,000 square feet on 14 acres of land, and we had tennis courts, a pool house, a lake, a dock, boats.
Did you have other houses?
I had about 20 different buildings and houses that I would rent out.
But Ira soon realized all that money came with problems. Even with his success, he says he was struggling to keep up with the cost of their extravagant lifestyle. And he says Susan had developed quite the appetite for the finer things.
I overextended myself, and then her spending just started amplifying and amplifying to the point where, you know, $40,000 a month on her credit cards was standard operating procedure.
What was she buying?
Everything from vacations she would plan, clothes, jewelry.
The way Ira saw it, he was the one doing all the working, while Susan, a stay-at-home mom with a live-in nanny, was doing most of the playing.
So her days were filled with lunch dates with friends, spa appointments, mani-pedis. She started book clubs and cooking clubs. She would be out literally about four nights a week.
Ira claims he was lonely and resentful.
You and Susan hit a major bump in your marriage when she discovers you're seeing another woman.
Right.
He says Susan discovered the affair from messages she found on his computer. But instead of filing for divorce, they planned to stay together with unorthodox rules.
We decided to have an open marriage, and she could start dating people.
He says it was an attempt at saving a marriage in shambles, and he thought the open marriage was working, but apparently his wife didn't. 3 months after their new arrangement, Ira says he was shocked when police came knocking on his door. Susan had filed a restraining order.
The sheriff gives me 20 minutes to pack my stuff, whatever I could grab. I am escorted out of my house. I wind up in my parents' house living in my old high school bedroom.
Ira says Susan claimed he was physically and verbally abusive to her and their children. Ira says, not true.
I am the least abusive person in the world. I don't even discipline my children, okay? They walk all over me like I'm a teddy bear.
And in fact, several months later, Ira says, Susan withdrew the restraining order and wanted to reconcile. He agreed to try, but soon enough, he says, the fighting flared up again. And that's when a beautiful former patient reached out to him.
So she was calling me out of the blue to say she'd like to meet with me and see if we can do business together.
Her name was Kelly Gribeluk, a woman with an eclectic career. A former mortician, now in the business of selling orthotics for shoes. Since Ira was a podiatrist, Kelly asked him to be part of her company. He agreed, and their professional relationship quickly turned personal.
She completely understood me. Like, I found someone that actually got me. And she's got a sexy kind of look to her.
Were you physically attracted to him as well?
Of course.
What do you think it was?
Chemistry.
Kelly was a mother of three young boys who had gone through a traumatic divorce that left her family in tatters, something Ira could relate to.
He started opening up to me about his separation, and we had shared some intimate things, and that we were going through very similar things.
But as much as she cared for Ira, she says she felt that it was more important he give his marriage another shot.
I wanted them to do what was best for their family. So I really truly loved him, and I thought that whatever would make him happy is what I wanted for him.
So she says she stopped seeing Ira and even met with Susan to tell her she had bowed out of the relationship.
At the end of the conversation, she actually said to me, if it doesn't work out between me and Ira, I want to see him end up with you. I think you're really good for him.
And just a few months later, Ira ran back to Kelly. The reconciliation with Susan wasn't going well. Nobody was happy. Ira started recording Susan, claiming her anger was escalating into threats.
You're about to jail in court.
And it was taking a big toll on him.
He was having panic attacks, couldn't sleep at night, nightmares.
What's that doing to you, watching the man you love go through that?
It's devastating.
Someone in this heated love triangle was getting desperate.
Coming up. A crowded marriage may soon be a little less cramped.
She bought me a picture in a Ziploc bag.
A picture of the target.
Along with the phone number for the target.
Someone's planning a hit, and it's all caught on hidden camera.
What you're asking to do is not cheap.
Thank you.
$200,000.
Okay.
In early April 2016, as the love triangle between the podiatrist, his estranged wife, and his new girlfriend reached a slow burn, a new character entered the scene, a luxury car salesman. He says he got an unexpected visit from a former customer. She came into his office and asked the unthinkable. She wanted someone murdered.
Did she look like the kind of woman who would be coming in to hire a hitman?
No way. Not a million years, I wouldn't think that.
His name is Mark Kenzie, originally from Haiti, a father of four who'd been selling cars for more than 16 years.
So the only thing I could ask is why.
Mark Kenzie thinks she came to him because of an earlier conversation they had when he offered to help her with her marital problems.
If you need any help, any kind of situation, we know, you know, a few people that could help you out. Meaning that I have a friend of mine in a police station nearby. I always call for any reason whatsoever.
Do you think she took what you told her the wrong way?
I think she did. She believed that I would harm the guy.
But he says he's no hitman. The woman was just hearing what she wanted to hear.
She sounded like she was so desperate to get this done. I think any little information, she would force herself to believe it.
He says he played along, trying to see if she was serious.
I told her that not something that I do, but I could potentially get her in touch with the people that could possibly do.
And did you have any background in law enforcement?
No.
You're just a regular guy?
A regular guy who hangs out with cops, pick up a few things here and there.
His unofficial police training kicked in. To make his story more believable, he says he got specific about the men he would use to do the hit.
These guys are like top black ops.
Was she interested?
She was.
After she left, Markenzie immediately texted his friend on the force, but got no response. In the meantime, to keep her on the hook, he had arranged a second meeting. You can see them together on this gas station security footage.
She brought me a picture in a Ziploc bag.
A picture of the target.
Along with the phone number for the target. Now I come to realize I do have something that is potentially serious in my hand. And I don't know exactly which way to go.
Finally, his cop friend called him back and directed him to Ramapo, New York police. Detectives Robert Fitzgerald and Peter Luzan were assigned to the case.
The thing we needed to do was to get Markenzie's cooperation.
Since the woman trusted Markenzie, detectives wanted him to keep playing the role of the bad guy. He didn't hesitate.
That's got to be really daunting.
It was kind of cool in a way, you know, like that's like 007 type thing.
Detectives then devised a plan. They rigged his car with cameras and audio recording devices.
The microphone was hanging over here, and under my seat here, I had a phone.
And they asked Markenzie to set up another meeting with the woman. The location? This large Walmart parking lot directly across the street from the police station.
We can literally see the police department.
Yeah, I mean, you can throw a rock and hit the police station from here. You know?
Markenzie, the newly minted informant, alerted police the meeting was set. A team of detectives raced to the parking lot to get in position.
It's an intense moment because when, you know, the case is just, you know, starting and she actually gets out of the car and gets into that car, we're like, this is fantastic.
As she got into Markenzie's car, detectives could watch and listen to every word in real time.
It can't be a robbery, it can't be a shooting, it can't be anything like that.
And it didn't take long before she started talking money. How much to have the target murdered?
Okay. When can we get to the pod?
The next day, detectives were watching when the woman met with Markenzie again. This time, she suggested how the target should be killed.
Was that like either a hit and run, like when she's getting out of a car, or like plain an accident? She may back up into her and the guy stays and says, I didn't see her. You know, it's plain an accident, so there's no investigation.
Over the course of two meetings, the woman also managed to negotiate the price down to $100,000.
So you'll do it for $100,000?
Agreed to pay a $2,000 deposit, and then asked about his refund policy.
Should I say, by the way, the deposit's refundable?
So who was the woman? Well, you've already met her. Yep, it was Ira's girlfriend, Kelly Gribbelook. And her target?
Susan Bernstein.
Ira's wife. Apparently, his girlfriend had cooked up a cold-blooded plan to end his marriage problems for good. But detectives Fitzgerald and Luzan didn't think Kelly was working alone.
So we're thinking of another scenario.
So they asked Markenzie to push Kelly for a meeting with her partner, and she agreed it was a good idea.
I think we said you guys talking about where you guys planning on.
Yeah, we did.
And then it happened. Later that night, they both showed up.
Coming up, who was Kelly's partner?
Listen, the money's not the problem. I'm telling you right now.
And together, they have a new job for the hitman.
This is where this whole story goes a little bit Hollywood.
Yeah, it literally.
When Dateline continues.
As Ramapo detectives continued to investigate the plot to kill Susan Bernstein, they became convinced that Kelly Gribbelook was not acting alone, that someone else was the mastermind.
Even if it's a hit and run.
Investigators had their suspicions about who that was, but they needed proof. And less than a week later, they got it At the parking lot across the street from the police station, detectives were in their unmarked cars waiting.
All of a sudden, I think he's pulling in.
He finally showed.
Right.
Who was the other person?
That was Ira Bernstein.
Incredibly, this was a man all the detectives knew well.
He's your police foot surgeon.
Yes.
Is that just blowing your mind that it's Ira?
One of the funny things is we were both patients of his. Now we had to be concerned, is he going to recognize us when we're doing these surveillances?
Rockland County Executive Assistant DA Richard Moran was on the case from the beginning.
Ira, he actually got in the car with the informant.
Hey, how are you?
And started talking to him about how he wanted his wife killed.
Yeah, I mean, ASAP.
The lesser you two know, the better
right,
you
I agree. Me.
It was a game changer.
Wasn't that enough to arrest him right then and there?
No money had been exchanged. In New York, you do need an overt act. And we had some stuff, but we did not want to jump the gun on this.
How are you?
So they arranged another meeting, hoping Ira would show again. He didn't, but something big happened. Kelly finally handed over money for the hit.
So how much are we talking about now?
A $2,000 deposit.
Nothing until we give you the go-ahead. He said, just be on standby.
As detectives waited for Ira and Kelly to give the go-ahead, this melodrama took a new turn. Kelly added two new targets.
Kelly shows up to one of the meetings and says, he hasn't committed yet, but he wants you to take care of two insurance investigators.
Kelly didn't ask for them to be killed, but to be beaten up. Detectives believe this new job was a way to test Mackenzie to see if he was the real deal.
And Kelly asked him, are you a police officer?
You're sure you're not involved with the police, right?
We believe that they don't think that someone working with the police would actually have two innocent people just doing their job beat up.
And they were willing to pay quickly to get it done. Kelly handed Mackenzie a brown bag filled with cash, $2,500, half of the $5,000 fee.
So he wants to make sure they're out of commission for a long time. Any possibility he doesn't speak or not?
Detective Luzanne reached out to the insurance investigators and quickly discovered why they were the selected targets.
I called them and said, listen, I really want to speak to you in person. I didn't want to tell them over the phone. They said, well, we're coming to Rockland anyway because we have an investigation into Ira Bernstein.
Luzanne says they were investigating Ira for insurance fraud, suspecting that he'd been illegally padding his insurance claims.
How did these insurance investigators feel when you told them that there's this plot out to have you beaten up?
They couldn't believe it. They were shocked, and then they were very concerned.
The detective asked the investigators for their help.
This is where this whole story goes a little bit Hollywood.
Yeah, literally.
Would the investigators be willing to be actors for the day? A theatrical plan was in the works.
This might sound crazy, but maybe we can get a makeup artist, make it look like they were actually beat up.
How did they react to this idea?
Well, I think one of them was like, I gotta talk to my wife first. But they agreed.
Police set up in this parking lot where they had a few of their undercover guys pretend to throw some punches.
And we took a lot of pictures of them beating them up. You know, we had to actually tell the investigators, like, don't overdo it, just fight back a little bit. This is a huge moment in our case, you know, in that if they believe this ruse about the beating up the investigators, then we can probably get to the big thing with, you know, where he's trying to kill Susan.
I think once this is done, they'll feel more comfortable to move ahead with that right away.
The pressure was now on the car salesman. He texted Kelly to meet him in their usual spot. He had three photos tucked inside a newspaper, ready to show her.
And we had coached him ahead of time, no matter what happens, she's probably going to say, I want to take these pictures to Ira. Like, you know, we want Ira to come out. You know, when we need him to start, you know, him to commit. But no matter what happens, you make sure that the pictures stay with you.
Everyone was in place, waiting. Kelly was late. Then, finally, she showed.
I'm so sorry. You don't understand. I've been all over the freaking world tonight.
With his heart pounding, Mackenzie showed her the photos.
I love it too much.
So he wants to make sure they're not going to come to work with a broken leg next week.
No.
They're done. What'd they do to them?
Okay. Let's say another bit.
She seemed satisfied. And just as the detectives predicted, Kelly asked to take the photos to show Ira.
I thought you were going to give him the picture soon.
Come on. That's better for you. not to have him. Better for him not to have him.
So they got both sides.
Oh, yeah.
The salesman followed the detective's instructions perfectly, but then he came up with an idea all on his own. He knew law enforcement wanted Ira, so he told Kelly to call him.
Hello?
Hi, how are you?
Hey, Doc, you on speaker with me? I can show them to her, but I don't want to give it to her, obviously, so...
Right.
So he suggested to Ira that he could swing by his office to show the doctor the photos in person.
We'll come to the office, to the parking lot.
Yeah? That's a good idea.
Hey, listen, you're the boss at this point, you know.
Okay. All right, you want to, why don't you come over here? I'll try to run outside for a second.
Okay.
All right.
It sounded like the perfect plan, but is there really ever such a thing?
Coming up, did the sting just get stung?
What's this little thing between the seats?
Are you on the edge of your seats when he's pointing to that camera?
This is it. We're done.
The investigation had entered its third week. Ira had agreed to meet Markenzie, the informant, outside his medical practice. Here are Ira and Kelly walking towards his car.
The doctor comes out of his office. He's in his scrubs, goes into the car.
Hey, how's it going? How are you?
All right.
Markenzie showed Ira the photos of the insurance investigators looking like they were being roughed up. Ira immediately seemed suspicious.
Did it have me standing right next to each other?
Yeah, so the two of them, I guess they want to break or something.
And he's like, why are they wearing baseball cap and, you know, regular jacket? I said, I don't know.
You're really having to think on your feet.
Mm-hmm.
One thing.
So Markenzie started talking about keeping the photos.
I don't want to give them to you because
I don't need them. What do I need them for? I don't, you know. As long as it's done and done correctly, I just don't want them showing up at work anytime soon.
Hey, exactly. No. It's all foolproof.
At this point, Ira seems satisfied.
So he's like, okay, good. And we're like, it's a big relief. Yeah.
Remember, if he thinks they're fake, now he's really going to think something's up here.
And detectives had coached Markenzie on what to do after he showed Ira the pictures.
Ask him what's going on with the wife, or give him a deadline. Say, listen, it has to be by this time, or we're walking away. Yeah, but it has to be his decision. Don't force him to do anything.
So now the big question is, when is the next job?
Give me a week to think about it, Jack. All right? And then I'll give you the go-ahead.
Don't want to be too pushy.
I know.
I give you by this weekend.
Okay. Well, I'm going to be away for the weekend, absolutely. But I'll be at the end of the weekend, I'll tell you.
Okay.
Then the good doctor said what law enforcement was waiting to hear.
So I'll tell her. If she gives you the okay, then it came from me.
To detectives' ears, Ira was admitting he was the one pulling the strings, not Kelly. It was a critical moment. But just as they were ready to high-five each other, Ira turned around and pointed to something in the back seat.
What's this little thing between the seats?
He was looking directly at the hidden camera.
Are you on the edge of your seats when he's pointing to that camera?
Oh, yeah, you're kidding
Definitely.
Me. This is it. He's looking right at the camera when we're done. But Markenzie does a great job. He leans back and goes, oh, that's something for the kids' games where they plug into it.
And that's the receiver for the headsets.
That's the receiver for the headsets?
The receiver for headsets.
All right.
Crisis averted. Then, without skipping a beat, Ira moved on to the details of how Susan should be killed. They agreed she would be hit by a car.
Nice and clean, no problems, very smooth.
Very smooth. You have no worries, nothing. Nothing's gonna get back to you.
Okay.
All right.
Detectives waited five more days. Finally, Kelly contacted Markenzie.
She calls, hey, let's have another talk. Like, you know, this is gonna be the answer. It's either gonna be yes or no. And she shows up again in the Walmart parking lot. This time she doesn't get in the car.
Detectives were worried, since Ira had spotted their hidden camera, that he might have warned Kelly to stay out of the car.
So is that game over?
No, it's not game over, because we have audio on Markenzie himself.
What's up?
These are a few concerns.
Huh?
Red flag.
What?
Kelly said Ira had been checking up on the insurance investigators to make sure they had actually been beaten up.
You can call the hospital, then. They're not at any hospital up there.
Okay. So, what you want me to do?
worried.
So now he's paranoid about what now? The guys didn't get beat up?
No, that maybe, you know, this is just like a setup or something, or...
Come on now.
Then, despite all of her reservations, Kelly finally gave an answer about the hit on Susan Bernstein.
Okay, so the answer is this.
We don't hear any answer because she's holding up a phone. She had typed the word yes inside the phone, so she wasn't verbally going to say it.
But it didn't matter. Detectives now had confirmation Ira and Kelly were in, and the date was set. They believed Susan would be run over 4 days later on Thursday, May 5th, Cinco de Mayo. The prosecutor was now satisfied they had enough to arrest them.
Once Kelly says yes and agrees to give him money, the investigation is, for the most part, complete.
The police made plans for Kelly's arrest at the Walmart parking lot.
And how did this go down? Was it like a SWAT situation? Was it just a couple of officers?
It was. Well, there were several officers in plain clothes surrounding the area, but it was just two officers who approached her.
She was shocked.
Yeah, she was shocked. Actually, I went to the door and I said, I believe you know what this is going to be about.
When they brought Kelly into the police station, there was another staged Hollywood moment. They had handcuffed Markenzie and put him in a holding room.
She saw him in there. I saw her eyes meet his eyes, and I was, all right, so now she knows the supposed hitman's arrested.
You have any weapons or anything on you?
No.
They were hoping she would point the finger at Ira, but it didn't work out that right. way.
Be honest with us. Was that your money, or was it Ira's money? Kelly, I understand.
Don't make me answer.
I know you love him. I understand that. Kelly, do yourself a favor, okay? Just be honest. Is that bad, to be honest?
I'll be honest, I love him.
A few hours later, on his way home from dinner in the city, Ira was pulled over near his house and arrested.
He was so nervous, he was shaking away.
He was saying, my life is over, right? My life is over. I think he said, I just kill myself at that point, right?
A little later on that night. Because I'll never practice again.
Ira and Kelly were charged with conspiracy and solicitation to commit murder. You've heard law enforcement's side of the story, but the couple has a very different version.
Coming up, the would-be killers say they were victims too.
I saw someone that I loved being hurt, and it was not going to come to an end.
He made it very clear that we were going to be fed to the alligators if we didn't go through with this.
When Dateline continues.
Ira Bernstein, a respected doctor, and his girlfriend, Kelly Gribbelook, had been caught on hidden camera.
How are you?
Planning the murder of Ira's wife.
Is there any way anyone can hit her and then stay and say it was an accident?
But they say the video doesn't tell the whole story.
Did you want Susan Bernstein dead?
In the beginning, yes. But at the end, no.
There was no way in hell I was ever going to go through with this and hurt Susan.
While out on bail, Ira and Kelly agreed to sit down with Dateline. They shared with us how this whole murder-for-hire plot got started. For Ira, it was out of desperation.
Things had reached a horrible point.
Ira had a secret. He'd been stealing from an insurance company, overbilling for medical services, and he says his wife, Susan, knew it.
Did you feel like Susan was trying to blackmail you in any way?
She was trying to blackmail me in every way. She would look at me and she would say, listen, I have broken into your emails. I have printed out and recorded all of your business dealings. And I'm telling you now, if you don't give me everything I want, I'm going to the prosecutor and I'm going to expose you for everything and try to put you in jail.
Remember, Ira recorded Susan threatening him. Ira claims Susan was using that information to pressure him into signing a postnuptial agreement that stated if they divorced, he would give her most of their assets. Fearing Susan would make good on her threats, he signed it.
Only a moron would have signed this postnuptial agreement if they weren't under severe coercion and distress.
So you're the moron in the story.
I am the moron.
Remember, this is Ira's version of what happened. Susan and her lawyer never responded to our repeated requests to hear her side. Ira says it was during this volatile time that Kelly came up with the idea of hiring a hitman.
So Kelly did this on her own?
Yes. I had a conversation with her about it. It was more fantasy There was nothing legitimate to it.
What's hard is that a respected doctor was capable of even going down this road.
I don't understand that either. That was not me. That was a different person.
You both actually crossed over from just thinking about it to doing something about it.
Unfortunately, we did. And I was the one who put it into motion.
Did you worry about those kids not having their mom?
I did.
But it didn't stop you?
No.
Why was this more important than those kids having their mom?
Because I saw someone that I loved being hurt, and it was not going to come to an end. She was never going to stop.
Did you both imagine life without Susan?
Of course.
And what was that life without her around?
Peaceful.
Despite her fantasy of a peaceful life with Susan out of the picture, Ira and Kelly claim they had second thoughts. But there was a problem.
Did you say to Markenzie, we don't want to do this?
Yeah, I told him.
What'd he say?
He said, there's no backing out.
In an impromptu meeting where there were no police recordings, Kelly claims Markenzie told her a terrifying story about another client of his who wanted out.
He explained to me that he has to pick up a girl and bring her to the men, and they're going to be feeding her to alligators.
Did you take that as they could feed us to the alligators?
Absolutely.
He made it very clear that we were going to be fed to the alligators if we didn't go through with this.
You did have another option. You could have just paid them the money and walked away.
We thought about that. It was $100,000 that he wanted at that point. I don't think they would have went away, and we both came to the same conclusion.
But isn't it easier, though, to just not kill someone and walk away and take the money?
Yes. It just, at the time, we did not feel that that was an option. We didn't feel they were going to stop.
Despite their fears, Kelly says she and Ira had decided to back out anyway.
We both came to our senses. We're like, this is crazy. We're not doing this.
I think people are going to have a hard time believing that you really didn't want it to go through after everything you had done to set the plan in motion.
If we really wanted to do this, he would have been paid.
Coming up with $100,000 for me would have been a piece of cake. If I wanted it done, it would have been done.
Ira did, though, admit to paying to have those insurance investigators beat up.
And I made the biggest wrong decision of my life, which was to put the welfare of myself above the welfare of those investigators and to allow them to be subjected to getting hurt.
What would you say to them?
I don't even know what I could say to them. What I did was disgusting. Thank God this was all a sham and nothing happened.
Did you ever think that you could have been part of a sting operation?
You know, the weird thing is I was almost hoping it was part of a sting operation at that point because I wanted to get out of this so badly.
Why should people believe you? People could think, yeah, he's just trying to change his story now because he got caught.
Anyone that knows me knows that I am not a violent person. And I really believe that Susan knows me for 23 years, and even she knows there is no way I would have ever let this happen.
The prosecutor thought Ira was lying, and to prove it, he wanted Kelly's help. But she refused to cooperate, at least when they were first arrested. Then, Moran spotted a potential crack in their relationship. Ira had gotten out of jail in 4 days, while Kelly, 4 months later, was still behind bars.
Why didn't Ira bail her out?
I guess you'd have to ask him. She might have the same question.
This was Moran's chance to pounce. He knew Kelly was angry and hoped she would finally agree to roll on Ira. So he offered her a plea deal. In exchange for testifying against Ira, she would get 12 years in prison with a chance for parole in 4. Her attorney, Jonathan Ripps, explains why she took the deal.
If she were convicted after trial, I'm fairly confident the judge would give her close to the max, which would be 8 1/3 to 25 years, and that's an awfully long time.
Plea deal felt safe?
Anything involving state prison that is years in length is going to be an ugly number, but the alternative, had there been a conviction, would have been much more drastic.
With the plea in place, Kelly was all set to be the prosecution's star witness against Ira. But in this twisted tale of greed and lies, could anyone be trusted?
Coming up, answering for the past.
What I did was wrong.
And thinking about the future.
Some people call this a twisted love story.
I think it's true love.
As the case headed towards trial, it looked like the estranged lovers would point fingers at each other. Kelly was now cooperating with the prosecution, and Ira's defense? To throw his girlfriend under the bus. He claimed he never gave the go-ahead to have his wife murdered, and says that was all Kelly.
She came home on that evening, and she told me she had to tell him yes.
So she went rogue on you, you're saying?
Pretty much.
Rockland County Prosecutor Richard Moran wasn't buying it. He says the evidence told the real story.
When you look at the meetings and you listen to them, Kelly couldn't make one decision. Ira was the one calling the shots. Was she the person who was the conduit? Sure. But in the end, Ira had a goal.
This was all about money, in your eyes?
Yes.
He believes Ira had no intention of honoring that postnuptial agreement where he consented to give Susan most of their assets if they divorced.
Ira Bernstein was a man who wanted to keep everything that in his eyes he worked so hard for. And he was going to do what he had to do, whether it be have the insurance investigators beat up or having his wife killed.
The cornerstone, really, of the defense of case is that Ira tried to call it off at the end, but that there were threats. If you don't go through with this, harm could come to you.
That's simply not the case. In fact, after they claim they were subject to the arrest, they actually hire him to do the other job to beat up the two men.
And he says nowhere on the tapes or in text messages did Ira and Kelly say they changed their minds about killing Susan.
Even if they did change their mind, they never called the police to tell the police, hey, there's a hitman out there hired to kill Susan. They never called Susan to say, watch out. They did nothing.
And Moran says there was another indicator Ira and Kelly planned to go through with the murder.
On the day that Kelly told the informant yes, she called and made dinner reservations for the entire doctor's office for May 5th. And that was the day that Susan was going to be run over.
How may I help you?
Hi, I made reservations last night for Cinco de Mayo, and I wasn't sure if I told you 7:30 or 8 o'clock.
It's an alibi. Kelly and Ira wanted everybody from work to see that they were with them, acting normal, when Susan got killed.
As the trial date drew closer, Moran was feeling pretty good about his case and his star witness. But there was a hitch. After Kelly got out of jail, instead of rolling on Ira, she moved in with him.
Kelly seems like she has this fierce loyalty to Ira.
She certainly does.
Kelly was now too much of a wild card, so instead of going to trial, the prosecutor offered Ira a deal. 15 years in prison, eligible for parole in 5.
There was a real defense here.
Ira's attorney, Jeff Millman, says even though he believed Ira had a strong defense, he knew going before a jury could be a gamble.
Here you have two people who've been talking about planning a murder, and then you're supposed to take their word for it that they were trying to call it off.
It's one of the obstacles of trial, absolutely.
And there were Ira's other charges, insurance fraud, and ordering the assault on those investigators. So he accepted the deal and pleaded guilty to grand larceny and conspiracy involving the plot to kill his wife.
We resolved everything with the plea. All financial investigations, all crimes alleged to have been committed.
As for his estranged wife, Susan, the intended target, she didn't find out about the plot until after Ira was arrested.
She actually wasn't surprised.
Susan had the opportunity to say her piece at Ira's sentencing. She requested not to be on camera.
Ira is evil and cold-hearted and a narcissist. The only remorse Ira has is that the murder did not occur. He is the scariest type of criminal, smart with no remorse.
But Ira says he is remorseful for all the pain he's caused his family, especially his children.
I love my children very much. What I did was wrong. I will spend every day for the rest of my life making it up to them.
So how will this saga end for them? It depends on who you ask.
I don't know where this is going to go. I know I still care about her a lot. I'm hoping we can get through this.
The only good thing that came out of this was that we've both come to the realization that we really love each other.
Ira and Kelly were released from prison in 2021. According to her lawyer, the two have no contact. As for Markenzie, the car salesman who played the role of a lifetime says he's happy for the Hollywood ending. The good guys won.
The detectives and the prosecutor said that you're the hero in this. Do you feel that?
No. Not at all. And I felt like, you know what? That was the right thing to do. Being a hero? No. They're the hero. They're the one out there every day. Not me.
That's all for now. I'm Lester Holt. Thanks for joining us.